At a time when investors are confronted with market volatility and a variety of challenges fueled by the uncertainty of inflation, unsettled geopolitical tensions, and economic pressures, Justin Klein and Steve Peasley stand ready to take your finance and investment questions and share their unbiased answers. This is InvestTalk, independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. This is our Monday, May 1st, 2023 edition, and it's a new week. And we are still in the midst of earnings season, and we embark as well on Fed week. We have the Federal Reserve meeting on Wednesday, and that's certainly going to move markets, not necessarily based on what they do on Wednesday, but what they say on Wednesday. And we're going to look at that impact, as well as what's happening in the broader economy and for individual companies. And be driven by your questions, your concerns, your topics that you bring to me. That's what's most important here. I can give you my perspective of over 20 plus years of investment experience, but ultimately it's about what's on your mind. You probably thought of some things over the weekend. Maybe you had a conversation with a cousin or a friend or a brother or a sibling. Whatever it is that's on your mind, don't hesitate. That's what this show is all about. It's unpacking your thoughts and trying to give you the pros and cons of every asset class, every company, so that you can make the right decision for you. And so this show is about you becoming a better investor, a successful investor. And our phone lines are open at 888-99-CHART. You can call anytime, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or if you're listening live during our live stream show, you can call then as well and talk to me directly. Now, I have a lot of material to cover on today's podcast, and the main focus point is going to be what one more Fed rate hike could mean for you. How will this impact different rates? And ultimately, your personal financial situation. In some ways, it may be better. In some ways, it may be worse. We're going to look at that. Also, like I said at the top of the show, we are in the midst of earnings season. And about 90 companies have reported out of the S&P 500. So not a whole lot. But it's always good to... It's a decent sample size, right? So it's always good to kind of take a look at that and see where we are at. All right. I also want to touch on the dollar. A lot of people have talked about de-dollarization and how dollar is going to lose its reserve currency. And I kind of given you my distillation of what my long-term view on the dollar is and global reserve currency. Basically, eventually, probably a decade plus down the line, it'll be switched out for something like a bank or. But in the near term, and this is important if you have investments in companies in foreign markets that operate in foreign markets, in the near term, the dollar, based on various metrics, looks a bit overvalued. So we're going to look at that data point. And then lastly, if we have time, we're going to look at the fiscal deficit, and what the first half of this year is looking like, right? So that's ultimately what's on my mind, but that matters a lot less than what's on your mind. So give me a call. We also have some voice bank questions ready to play. One is on Boise Cascade. The other is on World Wrestling Entertainment. And I think I have an iTunes review question to answer on top of that. My perspective today also centers around two trending financial topics, U.S. debt and inflation. So I hopefully have time to fit that in. So give me a call now. We're taking your live calls at 888-99-CHART. Let's take a look at the market today. Now, over the weekend, FRC, First Republic, it went into receivership. And a lot of people would say, oh, well, that's mean the market's going to be down big on Monday. Well, it was down a little bit on the open of the futures last night, but we opened positive on the day today and we closed about flat. So really, FRC, is it newsworthy? Absolutely. Is it likely to have a major impact on credit availability in the economy? Probably not. Right? It looks like JP Morgan's going to be picking up these assets. And ultimately, that probably just means a bigger and more profitable JP Morgan. Okay. And you saw that up decent today. So overall, it's still a wait and see on the Fed. That trumps everything to do with what's happening with those small and medium-sized banks. All right. Now let's pivot to our first listener question now.
Hello, Invest Talk. My name is Brian. I'm calling from Ohio. I was wondering if you could go over the stock Western Union, WU. I always like to listen to the program. Thanks.
All right, looking at Western Union, and this is a company that has been in decline, but not as much decline as, you know, the stock price is showing. All right, supposed to make $1.58 this year, $1.64 next year. It's a $10 stock. So you're talking about trading at a 6x, 7x. So very cheap. It has, let's see, enterprise value to EBITDA around on 4. I think it's definitely undervalued. Right, its free cash flow is $373 million. It has nearly a 10% free cash flow yield. And it's taking that cash flow and it's buying back shares. And so eventually it's going to be able to buy back all of the shares. But that's really what you're dealing with here. It's a very cheap company, but you have to understand their business is dying. So how slow will that ice cube melt? And I think it's been slower than the market is really pricing it. So I do think it's undervalued. Now, technically, it's still, you know, struggling, but definitely cheap long term and does pay an 8% dividend yield. Eventually, that'll probably be cut. So I wouldn't be buying it based on that. You can see that based on the fact that their dividend rate has paused, right? It hasn't been raised since middle of 2021. So it is cheap, but understand it is a melting ice cube. And your bet here is that it will melt slower than the market is expecting. And I think that's a good bet. Now we're going into a quick break. And please remember that you can call anytime and leave your question on the InvestTalk Voice Bank. Or if you're listening via the live stream or on AM 1220 radio in the Bay Area, you can call now at 888-99-CHART.
When listener questions are played on the InvestTalk podcast,
how do you guys determine a value stock?
The caller voices are amplified many thousands of times.
Just wanted to get your opinion on JP Morgan and BAC.
How do you see this looking forward?
I'm 25 years old and have a question about retirement funds.
And the unbiased answers from Justin Klein.
That's why it's trading so cheap, because there's a lot of regulatory risk here.
And Steve Peasley.
I kind of like it here. If I was going to buy Tyson Foods, this is where I'd buy it.
Benefit the entire InvestTalk community.
Thank you for what you guys do.
That's why 24/7, rain or shine, no matter how simple or how complex, your questions make a difference.
Symbol BKE, what's your outlook?
And InvestTalk is made better by the power of you. So don't forget to call 888-99-CHART. Justin Klein is here and ready to take your calls live. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to John in the Bay Area talking about rental properties.
Hey, Justin, how's it going? I heard Steve last week talk about renting versus buying, and I purchased a property about 10 months ago through a brokerage which gives you a below-market interest rate. My lender is Bank of America, and they said after 12 months, I could rent out the property. However, the broker's contingency is that it has to be owner-occupied. I was wondering if I rent it out, will the lender contact the broker to not let them know I'm renting out the property?
It's unlikely, to be honest.
Okay.
It's unlikely.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't worry about it. They want to make sure that you're paying the mortgage. That's ultimately what they want. And so will they tell them? Maybe. And maybe they won't, and most likely they wouldn't do anything even if they did tell them. But I think both are unlikely. So I wouldn't worry about it too much. So it sounds like you're living there right now, and then you're going to turn into a rental?
I'm hoping to, because I don't really like living here that much, but I'm just a bit nervous because I did sign some paperwork saying that if the brokerage finds out that I'm renting it, there's a $25,000 fine and an automatic foreclosure. So I don't want to do anything that causes me issues in the long run.
Yeah. I mean, I would definitely consult with more of a real estate attorney with that and look at that verbiage and make sure you don't get hit with that. But you know, it's a good lesson, to everyone out there. When you're committing to a property, you want to make sure you really love it. Especially in an environment like this. Did you move from a different area, or is this something that, you lived there for a while, lived in that area for a while?
I called you guys about this house a few months ago, but I lived in the East Bay area and I moved to Suwannee County in Vallejo, and I don't really like living here.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really want to hang on to the place. So I'm just trying to see what my options are.
Well, you can always sell it.
Yeah, I could, but then I would take a loss. But I think I'd be better off selling it if I can't rent it out, because I wouldn't want to live here too much longer.
Got it. Okay. Well, good luck. Yeah, I would talk to a real estate lawyer and have them look over those stipulations and advise you, because obviously I don't know enough about it to really give you the perfect advice, but I would definitely consult a professional. Thanks for the call.
Okay.
And that's a great lesson there. And this is what I've been saying for really the past 2-3 years for our listeners, clients, and saying, you know, when you're going to buy a property, it's, and this is, I think this is going to be for the next 10, 20, 30 years. You know, we talked about interest rates being in a 30-year up and down cycle. It's typically how interest rates move, 30 years up, 30 years down. This recent cycle is a little bit longer. It was exaggerated, closer to 35 years from the peak and back in, 82. And so you're now in an environment where interest rates are going up. And that means something very different for owning a property. It means that if you're not guaranteed price appreciation anymore, because you're not going to have interest rates consistently moving down to inflate the value of properties. That's just not a scenario that's likely to play out going forward. Our interest rate's going to go, the mortgage rates were, let's call them 20% in the early 80s, and then they went all the way to 3%. Are we going to go to negative? What would that be? What would that delta be? Negative 14%? Over the next 30 years in mortgage rates? Probably not, right? So best case scenario, mortgage rates are going to fluctuate between 5-7% for a long time. I think it's best case. Worst case, you get, mortgage rates back into the, low teens. Probably not happening anytime soon, but could that happen 15 years from now? Sure. So when you're committing to a property, it's a big commitment, and you need to make sure all the boxes are checked. I said this consistently, all the boxes, because you don't want to be like that caller, like John, and saying, well, now I'm upset on the property. And now do I rent it? Can I rent it? Should I rent it? No, the easiest thing is be patient. It's an environment where, unless you love it, I just bought a house, right? I love it. I don't really care whether the price of the property goes up a little, down a little. Don't care. I'm going to live here for a long time. So, I don't worry about it. But for somebody else, for all of you out there, if you're going to buy a house, your own personal property, You need to make sure that it checks all the boxes. And then when it comes to owning a rental property, right, you need to make sure that your yield is much higher than your cost of capital, the cost of the mortgage on that property, at least by 100 basis points. And then you need to know the surrounding economy is going to do fairly well. You need to really have all your numbers dialed in. Especially when you can go get CDs at 4.5%, or go buy corporate bonds at 7%, right? Much better alternatives today than there have been in the past, especially for your cash and the value you have stuck in rentals. Now we're moving into a break. I'm ready for your questions. Invest Talk is 888-99-CHART. That's how you get through and ask your question on today's show.
One of the most rewarding things I do each weekday is host the Invest Talk podcast. I truly enjoy helping investors, and I know that every question counts and every answer I provide will be unbiased. You, the caller, get to chart the course for each Invest Talk podcast. Call with your questions anytime, day or night, 888-99-CHART.
Now, my focus point looks in the story behind this headline. What one more Fed rate hike could mean for you. And like I've said at the top of the show, this is Fed week, and we're likely to get a quarter point increase in the Fed funds rate all the way to 4.75 to 5, I believe is the range. And all of this monetary tightening, I always get those two flip-flopped in my mind briefly, but monetary tightening is cooling inflation. And higher prices are causing real wages to decline. So real average hourly earnings are down 0.7% from a year earlier. So incomes are not keeping up with inflation. And ultimately, that makes it harder for people to afford their lives. And you can see that in the numbers for credit cards and credit card borrowing. So and this is in the midst of, you know, higher interest rates, the higher cost of credit. So people are leaning on credit more and it's costing them more. The average credit card rate is now more than 20% on average. And nearly half of credit card holders carry debt from month to month. Obviously, you shouldn't be one of those. You know, we don't talk a lot about personal finance on this show. I wish we probably should do it more. Sometimes I think it's maybe not as interesting to people. It's probably why I don't talk about it enough. But it's the foundation. It's the foundation of anyone's financial life is making good personal finance decisions, right? Spending less than you earn. It's that simple. Okay. And for most people, they're not, right? They're carrying credit card balances and paying high interest. So if the Fed raises rates, guess what? That interest rate's going to go up. Probably over the next billing cycle or two. Now, on the mortgage side, the average 30-year fixed mortgage is now up to about 6.48%. That's down slightly from November's high, but still much higher than it was a year ago. And now this shift probably won't matter much to mortgage rates, at least in them raising rates in and of themselves. That's priced into markets. It's really about what they say going forward and how expectations will shift. And that will ultimately move the treasury market, the 10-year treasury market, which is the proxy for those 15 and 30-year mortgages. Now, if you have a home equity line of credit or an adjustable rate mortgage, this will impact you because those are pegged to prime rates, and prime rates do rise and fall when the Fed funds rate moves. And most adjustable rate mortgages adjust once a year, but HELOCs adjust right away. And the average HELOC is up to about 8%. Okay, so if you have a HELOC, you're going to be charged more interest. Now, on student loans, most borrowers aren't really affected because their rate's fixed. But if you're taking it out this academic year, the rate's up to about 5%. But any loan dispersed after July 1st will likely be even higher. Okay, so understand it's not about this academic year, but if you have a child, a family member, let's just say that, that is going into another school year and they're taking loans out, that's going to be at a higher rate next school year. And that's, once again, linked to the 10-year Treasury note. Now, Treasury bill rates, the deposit rates, deposit rates are also likely to go up a bit as well. Now, the average savings account only yields 0.39%, but high yield online savings accounts are at about 4.5%, some of them, and that could go up a bit. Now, this is likely the last increase for a while. That's really the expectation here, is that the Fed's going to hike one more time to get to that 5% range, and they're going to pause. And now the market expects rate cuts by the end of the year, but in the meantime, those short-term rates are likely to remain pretty elevated, 4.5, 4.75, I think you can get up to, okay? And if you haven't benefited from these higher rates, then you should probably look elsewhere with your cash and try to get some of that invested. So that's a quick overview. Now, when people take the time to leave an InvestTalk review on iTunes, we like to thank them for the courtesy by getting to their questions quickly. Karen Singh says, I love your show and listen to it religiously. I have a question about investing in GM for 5% of my portfolio. This stock is trading less than its book value, and it looks like there are projections for the next year are good. Not sure how the economic environment is going to affect it, though. Well, here's the issue. I just don't love car companies. Auto companies are some of the worst businesses in the world. They're highly capital intensive, right? Highly capital intensive. Huge factories, lots of inventory. You're dealing with unions, especially if you're producing here. They're just not great businesses, and they're very cyclical. And then if you look at the chart, doesn't inspire confidence. Let's just say that. Okay, so I would look elsewhere. GM is just not near the top of my list of industrial names that I would own. You want to look for something probably a bit smaller, less capital intensive, that is not an industry that is so competitive, right? The auto industry is extremely competitive. So I'm going to give a no to GM. All right. Now, coming up soon, my Fresh Perspective report, and it centers on two connected financial topics, U.S. debt and inflation. But for now, I'm moving into a break, and I'm ready for your questions on InvestTalk at 888-99-CHART. Have you heard about Backblaze? Backblaze is unlimited computer backup for Macs and PCs. And here's the good news. Backblaze is just $7 per month. Only $7. That's right. You can backup docs, music, photos, videos, drawings, contracts, projects, all of your data. With Backblaze, you can access your backed up data from anywhere in the world using the Backblaze web app. And yes, you can access files on the go with mobile iOS and Android apps. Then, if ever needed, you can restore by mail. Backblaze will ship a hard drive with all of your data directly to your door. It's the restore, return, and refund program. With Backblaze, you can easily protect business data through a centrally managed admin interface. If you are concerned about accidentally deleting files, you can increase your file retention history to 1 year for an extra $2 per month. Backblaze has already restored over 55 billion files for customers. Backblaze is easy to use, affordable, secure, and provides what we all want: peace of mind. It's been recommended by the New York Times, Inc., Macworld, PC World, LifeWire, Wired, Tom's Guide, 9to5Mac, and more. So don't be that person, the one who forgot to back up their important files. Not when you can sign up for a 15-day, no credit card required, free trial at backblaze.com/investtalk. Go there now and get your fully featured 15-day, no credit card required, free trial at backblaze.com/investtalk.
The stock market is volatile.
It's constantly changing. So how are you positioned? Is your portfolio properly balanced, or are you taking unnecessary risks? You can get guidance anytime for free if you go to investtalk.com and take the brief Riskalyze quiz.
Hey, Justin or Steve, this is Jay from New York. I had a quick question. I have a small position on a stock. It's WWE, William Executives, and essentially I'm thinking about selling right now. I've had it for over a year now, and I think it's the best time to sell because right now there's talks about being bought out by UFC, and I'm thinking maybe I'll get back into it once the price falls. Please let me know what you think. Thank you.
All right. Looking at WWE, World Wrestling Entertainment. I have heard a bit of rumors about that. Yeah, being bought out by UFC. The current market cap is about $8 billion. But it's trading at pretty high valuation. You're talking about 20 times enterprise value to EBITDA, 7.5 times price to sales ratio. The good thing is they don't have any debt on their balance sheet. That's a positive. And they're very profitable. But you know, you're talking about free cash flow only $125 million. I just think the multiples here are way too high. Forward-looking earnings multiple is somewhere in the high 30s. That's just way too rich for my blood, especially if you look at last quarter's earnings. So earnings were down 22%, revenues were only up 5%. And, you know, demographics for wrestling are not fantastic, right? You have our society's aging, and there isn't a huge cohort of younger people to, you know, get engaged with wrestling. So I'm just not a fan of it. I think you've had this huge run up and multiples that I think are just edging or bordering on the edge of egregious. So absolutely, maybe look out for that 1 year mark. Make sure you get long-term capital gains if it's in a taxable account, but I definitely would be looking to trim or sell it. All right, thanks for the call. Now, my perspective today centers on the two trending financial topics, U.S. debt and inflation. Both are complex and nuanced. There's a lot of gray area here. A lot of people use hyperbole, but I think it would be good to do a simplistic overview and go back in history. Now, keep in mind, I'll be using round number estimates, so not obviously exact, but a brief definition of U.S. debt, the national debt of the United States, the total national debt owed by the federal government of the United States to Treasury security holders. So the national debt at any point in time is the face value of the then outstanding Treasury securities that have been issued by the Treasury and other federal agencies. Now, historically, the U.S. public debt as a share of GDP increases during wars and recessions and then subsequently declines, except for as of late, obviously. Now, the ratio of debt to GDP may increase as a result of a government surplus or via growth of GDP and inflation. So America has been in debt since the Revolutionary War. So that's nothing new. And usually there's three reasons for a run-up in debt. One is running large in a nation is expensive, right? We're very spread out and very diverse, and it's expensive to administer government programs throughout the nation. Second, we fight wars. Wars are expensive. And third, most notably, in the beginning, the early U.S. government didn't have the power to tax its citizens until a little over 100 years ago. The U.S. federal debt has increased from approximately $408 billion when adjusted for inflation in 1922 to $31.5 trillion in February of this year. Now, the country's total debt to GDP ratio is high. And the last time we had some sort of major economic event, it was 1929 and on the heels of the Great Depression. And back then, total U.S. debt outstanding was $16,931,000,000. But inflation has been 1,665% since then. So in today's dollars, somewhere around $282 billion, which is pretty low. So the GDP, low in comparison to the GDP back then, GDP in 1929 is $1.1 trillion. So it was only about 33% debt to GDP ratio. Now, in modern times, we have over 100% debt to GDP ratio. And about 33% of this debt is owed to foreign buyers of our debt. So that's where we are today. But post-World War II, we were in a very similar situation. And that was one reason we could get into World War II, is because we actually had a pretty healthy balance sheet going into World War II. Until we spent a bunch of money on the war, and then suddenly we had a lot of debt. And then they inflated away the debt through the late 40s, 50s, 60s, and then the 70s. So this is not a new situation, but you have to look at history to understand how are we going to deal with this situation. The last time we were in this situation, what do? We inflated away the debt. You keep the cost of borrowing low. Back then, they did yield curve control, very similar to what Japan is doing today. And then we spend money on a lot of public works projects. Does it seem like we might be going down that path? In my mind, I do. Now let's grab another voice bank question from 888-99-CHART.
Hi, good day, Steve and Justin. Love the show, longtime listener here. I have a quick question for you gentlemen. I'm looking at the stock, I believe the ticker symbol is BCC, Boise Cascade. It works with lumber and home building and so forth. Looks like a solid stock, pays it a little dividend, I believe, and I'm wondering about adding this to my portfolio. I don't have much in building at all, but I'm wondering if this would be a bad time to add this to my portfolio with house building and so forth, if it's too volatile. Please let me know what you think of this company, if I should add it, or maybe I should keep looking for something different. Thank you for everything you guys do. Please have a great day.
All right, looking at Boise Cascade, and they manufacture wood products and distribute that, and obviously they're tied to the building industry. It has two segments, wood products and building materials, distribution. So wood product segment manufactures laminate veneer lumber, joists, and laminate beams. And then the building materials distribution segment wholesales a lot of different building material. So very tied to the housing market and housing activity. Now the positive for, here's a big positive for this sector as a whole. And you know, we've been long a home builder, our favorite home builder for a while. And a lot of people say, well, interest rates are going up and the housing market's terrible. You have to understand the dynamics and the fact that the most homeowners are now rate locked. The new supply of homes are coming from the new home builders, not existing homeowners, right? So building activity is still pretty decent. Now, Boise Cascade's earnings are coming down. So you don't want to be looking backwards. The last 2 years, they crushed it. They made nearly $18 per share in 2021, $21.50 last year. But this year, supposed to make $7 per share. So certainly slowing down. And a big part of this, I think, is just remodels, building, home flippers, buying land, building spec homes on vacant lots. Things like that. That's gone, right? That's not happening. People aren't borrowing. The cost of capital is just too high for that type of activity. But they supply to home builders and they're still doing, relatively fine. And so looking forward, they're supposed to make $7 this year, about $7 next year. Analysts don't really probably know where this is going to level out at. If they continue to make $7 per year, it's pretty cheap stock. Okay. And long term, if you look at the profitability, Long-term, it tends to have a much lower profitability metric, right? In the low to mid-teens on average, return on equity, now it's at 48%, and that's from a high of 66%. So definitely reversion to the mean happening right now. And the big question is, where is that mean? Is it back to the $2 to $3 level it was earning pre-pandemic, or is it closer to $7, like analysts are expecting this year or next year? So that's the question you have to really ask yourself. Now, if you look at the chart's kind of neutral to slightly bearish, right? It's still making over the on a weekly chart a series of lower highs and lower lows. It's not a strong downtrend, but it's a modest downtrend since those highs. And I think it's the market still trying to figure out where is the reversion of the mean. So I don't love it. I don't like that long-term profitability picture and the fact that there's, once again, likely a continuation of reversion to, my guess is closer to $2 or $3 longer term. And that makes it expensive. So I'm passing on Boise Cascade because I just don't have a ton of clarity of what that longer term profitability picture will look like. All right. Thanks for the call. Now let's touch on earnings. We're in the midst of earnings season, and we have about 90 S&P 500 companies that have reported earnings, but 77% of them have beat earnings expectations. And this is a much higher beat percentage than the previous three quarters. So far, so good. Now, the question I think everyone has to ask themselves is this because analysts are too pessimistic? Right? Basically saying, oh, the fallout from the banking crisis, all this is going to feed into more of a stronger economic decline. And the reality is, so far, that hasn't come to fruition. And another overlooked aspect of this is that the earnings recession that this is basically marking, right? It's two quarters in a row. That's a recession. It's two negative quarters in a row. We have a negative quarter in the fourth quarter. We have a negative quarter this quarter. But if you strip out energy, that was actually keeping earnings for the second and third quarter last year positive. But if you strip that out, earnings have been contracting now since the second quarter of last year. So four quarters in a row. So does that mean we are actually nearing the bottom in the earnings cycle? It's rare to have an entire year where earnings are contracting. And so the fact that the worst of the financial contagion fears definitely haven't materialized, even in financial stocks. Earnings are expected to be up about 7.6%. And the top three, JP Morgan, Bank of America, and Citi, they're beating expectations handily. And operating margins look to be going up. One of the big reasons we've had basically four quarters in a row of negative earnings year over year is the fact that labor costs have been going up. Input costs. And they've been having a tough time passing that on to the consumer. But those pressures look to be easing, right? Inflation's come down. And so peak margin pressure was probably fourth quarter of last year. And so far, a dire earnings picture just hasn't come to fruition. Now that could change. Once again, this is only roughly 20% of the S&P that's reported so far. And we'll certainly report on more of it, but it's important to have that perspective. Okay, that, hey, you can talk about all the headlines, you can spin as many narratives as you want, but the reality is earnings have still held up. And I still go back to the fact that this is an inflationary recession. An inflationary recession is different than a deflationary recession. So many people have been used to that. So no way it was a deflationary recession. What we're maybe entering, is a modest inflationary recession. Not the end of the world. Now let's pivot back to the InvestTalk Voice Bank for a call that came in earlier from New York.
Hi, this is Duncan from New York. Quick question. I'm continuously trying to sell some tech positions, and recently with the earnings, it seems like tech is doing pretty good. So my question to you is, like, how do I take advantage of that wave? I'm looking at Apple, AAPL. I've held it for a while. It's obviously doing very good. And if I'm looking at all the moving day averages, it seems like that where it's heading is above the 50, above the 100, and above the 200. I remember a couple of podcasts ago, Justin was talking about that if the moving day averages are wider, that's like a good sign rather than it coming closer. So I guess the follow-up question is, how can you really tell whether or not it's good to take some profit off the table too, especially for the tech stocks that I'm just trying to slowly minimize my position in at this time of the economy? Thank you very much and have a good day. Bye.
All right. Great question. I like your point on the moving averages, but you know, Apple, it's kind of in a choppy period, and a lot of these tech stocks are, and this is actually bucking the broader tech stock trend. It is up into resistance. I will say that here around 170. But if it consolidates up here, then you're right. It is just moving higher into a more concerted uptrend. That's certainly possible. But this is an area that you do want to think about trimming if you are going to trim. All right. Thanks for the call. We're heading into a break. I'm ready to take your questions now at 888-99-CHART.
Each day, InvestTalk listeners submit their finance and investment questions via phone or email. Would you like your question to be put near the top of the list? Just take a minute or two to leave a review and rating for InvestTalk at iTunes. And be sure to include a brief question with your iTunes review comments.
We're going to talk to Nick. He's in Manhattan Beach. Wants to talk about Tyson Foods, TSN. Do you own it or looking to buy it?
I'm looking to buy it, Justin. Just pretty simple. It's towards the low end of its trading range over the past 7 to 8 years. I think the dividend is safe. It's obviously one of the premier suppliers by market share of meat in America, and we all like meat, whether it's pork or beef or chicken and whatnot. I don't think they're going to go anywhere. As I said, the stock looks cheap and the dividend's safe. I was just thinking, what do you think is a good price to buy it at?
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, technically it is at the low end of its longer-term trading range on the chart as well as fundamentally. I don't think it's going to knock your socks off, right? But if it can mean revert back into the mid-80s, I think that would be a nice return here from 62. Plus you get that 3% dividend. Like you said, I don't think it's going anywhere. Its operations, cash from operations is relatively steady. It has come down a little bit recently. But a lot of that probably has to do with the input costs for its operations. But you know, with potentially unemployment rising, you know, they're going to have an opportunity to probably expand margins, maybe not have to pay their employees quite as much. So I'm going to give this one a thumbs up. I do think they're at the low end of the range and their business prospects near term, and they will improve. So. I give it a thumbs up. Thanks for the call.
All right. I agree with everything. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, lastly, I want to touch on the dollar. And while the main topic of discussion of the day is when will the dollar lose its reserve currency, but I like to focus more on, you know, what is more immediate term. And so far, since the peak in September, the dollar's down about 8.6%, starting its worst year since 2018. And so there are many factors. One is obviously the banking system problems, potential defaulting on U.S. debt, and maybe a recession, maybe an inflationary recession, but a recession nonetheless, maybe later this year. And it looks like the Fed is going to be one and done this week. And the U.S., in a performance basis, has come out of a very strong period, and a lot had to do with the fiscal spending that's still pretty strong, but not obviously quite as strong as immediately after COVID. And other countries are catching up. So the global economy is improving while the U.S. economy is weakening. Now, a weak dollar, you might sound like, it's terrible, a dollar's weak. Well, in reality, it's actually very good for the global economy. It boosts the value of overseas earnings of U.S. multinationals, and it typically boosts global trade because goods priced in dollars become more affordable. And so we can export more around the world. Now, 60% of global liabilities are denominated in dollars. Remember, I talked about this before. If you go pay, you have a mortgage, you have to pay your mortgage back in dollars. And what this means is 60% of all global, we call them mortgages or liabilities of any kind, are denominated in dollars. And so when the dollar goes down in value, it makes it easier to pay that back, especially if you're in an emerging market, which where there's a lot of economic activity, like a lot of economic growth. And so that's a positive. This is actually a positive. Okay. Now, European growth is holding up better than expected. Why? Because the energy crisis didn't manifest as a lot of people were fearing. China's economy is expected to, or grew 4.5% in the first quarter. Better than expected. And that's right in line with what the IMF believes for this year. U.S. GDP expected to grow 1.1% this year. Eurozone GDP, 1.4%. And Chinese growth at about 4.5%. And a big factor that is underappreciated is the fact that European bond yields are positive. Remember when Europe had negative bond yields? What happened was there was a lot of capital flight out of that, saying, I don't want negative rates. I'm gonna push money into positive yielding currencies, positive yielding countries like the U.S. And now European rates are nicely positive, and there's money flowing back there as well now that they can earn, you can earn something there. And so that means money likely coming out of the dollar, at least in the, you know, the medium term. All right. So all those factors make up for probably weaker dollar going forward. All right. Now, I'm Justin Klein. This completes another Invest Talk program. Steve Peasley and I thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can get anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president, and Justin Klein is chief executive officer of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.